Lot of things to get in order. Okay. I will begin by going around and greeting the people on Zoom, and then the people in the Zendo will introduce themselves. So hello to Bob. Paula. Joan. Jim. Linda R. Yashay Soki. Tyler. Zach. Paul. Marv. Betty. Mick. John. Phil. And Sabrina. And in the Zendo,
Franklin.
Judith.
Erica.
Mark.
Dave.
Coral.
Carson.
Ted. Right. Let's see, in terms of announcements, we have a one-day retreat this Saturday. Online and in-person participation is available, and full-time or part-time is available. So I think it's going to be sweet. There'll be about 8 of us in the Zendo, and at least about 5 people have signed up for the Zoom, and I would imagine that there might be more folks than that who end up actually participating. So looking forward to that. Term student is also coming up beginning February 26th is the opening retreat, and May 14th, I believe, is the closing retreat. So that's the bare minimum that you need to commit to do that. And ideally, you've been involved with BrightWay for a few months already. I usually find that's a good idea because, you know, participation is part of the term practice. So it's good for you to know that this is actually what you want to do. Let's see, I think that's it, except I can say I am doing some research to see if we can find an out-of-town place to rent for session this year, and I have no idea what that'll look like. It'll all be pandemic determined, but possibly it would end up being something like I did at Great Vow, where everybody's vaccinated, everybody gets tested right beforehand. Now that we have, you know, short-term tests, you can even do stuff like wear masks the first day or two and test again and whatever. We can jump through some crazy COVID hoops because it's unlikely I'd be able to get a place for the summer months at this point. They're full. So the place that we wanted to rent at, I think October is the soonest, but I might be able to snag something for like August 2023. So, you know, I feel like I should just take that leap of faith and, you know, make some reservations and figure we're going to make it happen one way or another, because that would be a really sweet thing for our non-local people to be able to come to town and for all of us to be able to sit together. So anything else I should announce or any questions about any of that? All right. Let's see. Okay, so tonight we are continuing with Kyogen's book, You Are Still Here. And tonight's chapter is Confronting Expectations. Oh, and I forgot. I was gonna do a shared screen thing here. At some point, I guess I'll just pause and monkey with the computer in order to pull that up so that we can brainstorm a list of things together. That's just one of the many things that I should be getting set up before I sit down here, but I just forget. Before we get started, though, I just wanted to open it up, and I'll try to make a habit of this, to open it up to any questions or comments from previous classes. And actually, I see, Yesha, you have your hand up.
I'm sorry, which chapter did you say we're doing?
It's chapter 16, Confronting Expectations.
Okay, I heard the number wrong. I heard completely wrong. Thanks.
Does there happen to be any lingering questions or anything from past chapters or classes? I'll ask that again next time. So, you know, lodge that in your head tonight if there's something that you go, why? Something that didn't get addressed or something like that. All right. So just to set the stage here for this, like I'm buzzing there a little bit. To set the stage for the discussion, is that?
Yeah, reverb.
We have the amplifying speaker on as well, so. I don't know what that's about. Maybe just needs to be a little lower. Okay, so if you wouldn't mind just kind of sitting there for a moment, that'd be great. Okay, so I wanted to talk about Kyogen's story, and I realize if you've read the chapter, you read his story, but just to review, he grew up in a Christian Science household, which is very, you know, was very formative for him in good and bad ways, as he talked about. On the one hand, he grew up in a household that was very spiritual. So he was very keyed into the value of spiritual practice and reflecting on your behavior and reflecting on your state of mind. But he also, you know, it was, Christian Science is pretty extreme in some ways, in that, you know, what did he say? We're all God's like perfect idea, and therefore illness, death, even all of this is almost like an illusion. Like we can overcome this through our faith. So, you know, here you have a little boy who he described once, his arm got broken, and it was broken for a couple weeks, I think, before, I don't know, someone else brought him into the doctor, because there's just like, you know, mind should be able to heal everything. So he grew up with this sense of not fulfilling expectations, of this idea that, you know, God's perfection, and yet here we are, these limited, imperfect beings who are unable to fulfill these expectations. And then he said it kind of turned into a koan, into Zen terms for him. So on page 106, he says, "This issue turned around in my young mind and became a question. In God's perfect world, with everything having a place and a function that is in harmony, what's with flies and mosquitoes? How do they fit into this perfect picture? This just bothered the heck out of me. It was a question that came out of the tight bind I was in. I had had a view of something perfect, yet I was an imperfect person. So how does this harmonize? What do I do with this? In other words, what should this world look like? What should this life, my life, look like? What am I really supposed to be?" And then he goes off to practice in a Zen monastery for a while. So he says, practice in the monastery didn't resolve these questions. Instead, it intensified them. So he describes really vividly these formal meals that they would serve in the Zendo at the monastery. And I can totally relate to his his story here, where, you know, so they eat at ate the meals seated in the meditation hall. So a kitchen crew would cook the meal, and at a certain point, bells would ring, and they would bring this food. And, you know, it's they're on Mount Shasta. It's pretty cold certain times of the year. So the food waits outside the zendo for a while they're continuing to do these chants and bells and rituals. And then once they come in, then there's a, you know, formal way everybody gets served. Nobody begins eating until everybody is served. So he says, I used to think of the long period after being served and waiting to begin as the contemplation of watching oatmeal congeal. It would start out relatively warm when ladled into the bowls, but then would clump together and the milk would sort of settle in around it. And pretty soon it was a fairly solid, cold mass. Eventually I realized this was also the meditation, watching my thoughts and opinions about oatmeal congealing arise and fall. Soon I recognized just how much energy it took to sit there in opposition to the truth that my oatmeal was congealing. Day after day, I would sit there and the oatmeal would congeal. It wasn't going to change. My various opinions and observations about how long it was taking to do all this chanting, bowing, and serving wasn't going to speed up the moment of my first bite. That opposition to the truth of my breakfast just made the first bite all the more bitter. I found it a relief to stop the argument in my head, to let go of opinion and preference, and allow the present moment to be my life and my practice. It was tremendously liberating and became one of those very important moments in practice that changed me. I learned to just cut the congealed oatmeal into little lumps and eat it. That's what my morning practice was going to be, so why fight it? The truth is, we always have a choice, and the choice is whether or not we say yes to our lives, acknowledge what is there, and put down our opposition to it. So this is where I wanted to brainstorm about the kinds of things we have expectations about. So if you wouldn't mind giving me a moment, see if there's some kind of, I guess leaning over isn't a good thing. Open a blank Word document. Not now. Okay. Oh no. Start my free trial or enter my product key. Oh dear.
Your WordPad, that's free.
I don't know where it is. WordPad.
Just hit the search box at the bottom.
Word pad, there we go. Looks the same. Okay. Get the text nice and big so we can read it, and then I will share my screen. There we go. So, can I spell when I'm being watched? All right, so thinking about what kind of expectations we have that get disappointed when they're not fulfilled. Yes, I would like the margin to be wider and the thing to be bigger and the font to be smaller, but let's see. Okay, yes.
So what we say will be taken seriously.
Hmm.
That people will be truthful.
Hmm.
Things will turn out as I plan them.
That my wife will care about my day.
That people are sincere.
I would add, they will follow the law. Not steal.
That the whole day will go smoothly.
Children will honor their parents.
That people will do what they say they're going to do.
I have no idea how to change the margins so that I can fit more. I see nothing.
I could walk you through it.
Do you know where the
it's drag and drop. If you just grab these little bars here where it turns gray and drag them to the sides, you'll get margin in between the two arrows.
It's just not happening.
That one. What happens if you click and drag? Okay, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about.
Hmm. Oh, well, anyway. Oh, dear. I need tech support. If anybody is in the mood, I could use tech support. All right. So I just made the font smaller so that we can fit more on there. Yeah.
These things are all so big. I feel like we expect our favorite sandwich to be at the deli when we go there.
Yeah, I'll just say you expect small things to go our way throughout the day.
Expect a stoplight in front of Broadway to notice that my car is.
Stoplights to respond. We have a smart stoplight in front of the Zen Center that sometimes is not smart and will not change. I'd say young people won't get sick or die.
How are you defining expectation? It seems like these are desires. Is there a difference?
Hmm. Well, that's a good question. I mean, it certainly seems like they are a desire, but know. Does it seem like there's an added, there a desire that we expect will be fulfilled? Like I might have a desire to have a bigger house someday, but I'm not necessarily expecting that.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. And to me, like, it kind of fits on the spectrum based on like how angry you get when it doesn't work. Like, I would say, like, if you get really angry when it doesn't happen, that's almost like a demand. But, you know, on the other end where you're like, man, it didn't go my way, that's maybe like a hope. An expectation is in the middle somewhere.
Mm. Betty.
Am I muted? Yeah, I agree. I feel like I hope all these things are true and happen, but I expect the sun to come up tomorrow. You know, that's, yeah. It's like things that I feel like I know are going to happen are my expectations. But all these other things I just really hope for.
Well, do you feel like a little entitled to some of them? Like you're that your spouse will care about your day? You know, that's like.
Good question. I don't know if I feel entitled to any.
That is great. I mean, and maybe, you know, that's part of what we're discussing tonight is where those kind of desires, like that would be nice, transitions into some kind of expectation.
I think it's like when there's a strong emotional reaction, either anger or disappointment or hurt or something like that. You know, that seems to be the differentiator between desire and the hope, and let's say expectation.
Yeah. Yeah. So Franklin was just saying that, you know, a differentiator perhaps is just, you know, how do we react when our hope or expectation is not met? When we're anger or upset or disappointment.
When an expectation is not met, the world is what's wrong.
Yeah.
Mm. When the expectation is not met, the world is, it's somebody's fault. Paulette.
I mean, I think that some of them don't sound like desires to me. Like, people will be truthful. I think that there's like a moral essence to that one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people will be sincere and they won't steal. I mean, I don't know. They sound like they have like a more of a moral sense to them than just desire.
Sabrina.
Yeah, the part about expect versus desire, I think expectation to me is things like I expect someone not to drive into me. And that seems reasonable. And then when they do, it seems reasonable to also then be visibly angry and whatever else follows it. Separately, I wanted to add one. Generally expecting some level of ease or not feeling illness and not feeling pain. Hmm. And if we do, expecting that there should be some way to get rid of it.
And let's see, Zach. Looking at the text. Oh, you're very quiet.
You can call somebody else. Whoa, that's too loud, probably. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's good.
And then I went back down.
Yeah.
So I was saying, in the text, right, he was looking at a bowl of oatmeal. I don't think in his mind, he really didn't believe that it wasn't going to do the same thing day in and day out. Like, so yes, he was hoping, but there was also a struggle there. And I think that's really what it is. Like, he didn't want it to happen that way, but he knew it was going to. You know, we might not know, or we may know in the back of our mind somewhere that people aren't always truthful, but that's the thing that we're striving for.
Right. That's a good point. Tracy.
Um, Yeah, I think, you know, hearing everyone, I was in thinking about Carl Kogan's story and then my own is, I think expectations are perhaps the anticipation of or entitlement to a specific outcome. I think that's working for me. And I want to add to the list is that for me, like all reasonable requests should be met.
So the other thing I'm noticing in this list is like, you know, whether it's an expectation or desire or hope or a wish or whatever, it's going to be very subjective, right? Like there's no, this isn't like a set in stone for like, oh, everybody has these expectations like at all. And maybe that's obvious to everybody, but I think it's a very personal kind of thing. Like everybody's, you know, list is going to be different.
Yeah. So as Kogan discusses, the conundrum that we have here is, you know, he talks about letting go of expectations and he talks about this recognizing at some point how he's making himself miserable with this expectation that his oatmeal is not going to congeal, and then some, you know, is able to let it go. And again, it's that small thing. Somebody said that earlier, right? Like there's these big expectations, but actually the ones that catch us often are the little ones. And so he found that way to just let go of that expectation and, oh, interesting. You know, so he really learned something there. He said, he let go of my opinion and preference and allowed the present moment to be my life and practice. And he talked about how that's liberating. But we also, and he doesn't discuss this so much, but I think this is a natural reaction to this kind of teaching, certainly for me. We may need to respond. We may be able to change something for the better. So what do we mean by letting go of expectations, especially if the letting go of expectations isn't just something about like, you know, I expect, you know, my day to go smoothly. I expect people to be nice to me. I expect to, you know, my dinner will be delicious, but, you know, deeper things. Like I expect there to be justice in the world. I expect people to try to be fair. I expect people to be honest or whatever. So at what point is, you know, what does it mean to let go of expectations without just, I don't know, living in denial or checking out of life or something like that? So the, you know, what Kogan is talking about and what our practice almost always is a subtle shift in our internal attitude. So this is, I guess this is what helps me when I think about this is that we're not talking about whether or not you should do something to address a situation. It's really about this shift in inner attitude, which then it may be something you can't do anything about, and then you just chill. It may be something you can do something about, and then you probably can do it with greater equanimity if you let go of your expectations. Do you have something, Dave?
No,
okay. Okay. I did want to briefly do a 10 minute breakout where we discuss this. What does it mean to let go of expectations? How does it feel? So sometimes at the same time as we talk about what does it mean to let go of expectations, we're also kind of probably going to be talking about what does it mean not to let go of expectations. What does it mean? And I'm meant for that to kind of open it up to how do you do it? How does that manifest? you know, how does it feel differently? But what does it mean? Or what does it mean to you anyway? And in particular, I think a letting go of expectation, which leads to some relief, some of that kind of relief and objectivity that Kyogen described, which I think, you know, we've all had experience in some form or another. So what does it mean to let go of expectations? So I will stop sharing, and then Bob, do you want to invite people to breakout rooms and just leave us in there for 10 minutes? Okay. It looks like Tracy needs to be sent to a room. Okay. And those of us in the Zendo, do you want to do groups of three or four? I guess there's eight, so you could do two groups of four. All right.
Sounds good. You don't split up on purpose.
Okay. So we need to do some practice with our amplifying speaker. I don't think it has anything to do with interaction with Zoom. I think it's, I don't know. Go figure. Seems okay at the moment. All right.
Sorry.
Okay. So anybody want to share anything that came up? Any questions that came up? Expectations, how we practice with them? Anything anybody wants to bring back to the big group?
Yeah, I can mention something for our group, or a couple things, and if you guys want to add,
be sure to speak up.
I'll try. So one thing we did talk about was expectations not always necessarily being a bad thing, that kind of the fabric of society is sort of built around certain expectations, you know, the shared, just things like communicating, how we talk, there's an expectation that we don't talk over each other. So that was a good example. I could go into more detail there, but that's the main thing there. What else did we talk about? I guess one other aspect has to do with, you know, expectations being kind of analogous to creating narratives or stories about outcomes. And that is something that I feel is that a lot of times that those stories and narratives become kind of a way to get away from the emotional fear, I guess, around the unknown. Like we don't like to have open questions as in general. So I guess those were kind of the two biggest things.
Cool. Could the Zoom people hear that? Cool. Hey. All right. Anything else? Betty.
This is, we had a great breakout room and some really interesting things came up. One of the things that hasn't come up, and maybe you'll touch on it, so I just want to plant this seed, is that how do we deal with expectations we have of ourselves and how we react to failures to meet the expectations, like I never want to make a mistake, and when I do, I'm really hard on myself, you know, that kind of stuff. So I just don't know how that fits into the discussion.
Yeah, and to some extent, that's kind of where Jogen's exploration came into it, right? That he was trying to fulfill his parents' expectation, the expectation of Christian Science, and then was, you know, definitely unable to do so. So let's see. Let me go into some thoughts that I had on this. I guess Kyogen goes into this a little bit about the ideal versus the actual, and that part of our practice with respect to expectations has to do with opening up to this. 109. I had the idea from my childhood that I had to be perfect in some way, but what way? What is the measure of perfection? I had to drop my rulers because it can't be measured that way. Perfection is about being ourselves without opposition, meeting conditions as we can, long in some situations, short in others. Dealing with this has to do with making a shift in our point of reference from small mind, habit energy, preferences, and opinions to those things we think define us and so limit who we are. So that's small mind. And shifting to big mind, the space through which all of these things move. True self is truly selfless and functions from the unconditioned mind. This practice is a shift of view from the relative and conditioned to the absolute and unconditioned. This is the practice of Buddha. So, as we talk about often, right, in terms of the absolute and relative, ideal and actual, dependent and independent dimension, everything is perfect just as it is, and nothing is perfect. Simultaneously, both of these things are true. And it is, that seems to conflict, but amazingly, it does not. So nothing is perfect, right? And this isn't just a critical, like eventually you're going to be disappointed by everything kind of attitude, right? This is inherent in existence. This is dukkha or dissatisfactoriness. Everything changes. As Dogen says, when one side is illuminated, the other side is dark. Like, you know, light shines on this side, the other side's going to be dark. Anything that we do has positive repercussions and negative. I was hearing Dave talking about the story about, you know, the guy who ends up with a horse, right? And, oh, aren't you lucky? But then the son rides the horse and gets thrown off and gets a broken leg. Oh, that's unlucky. And, you know, but then they come to draft kids for the war, and then the son doesn't go, and they say, oh, you're lucky. And all along he says, well, we'll see. You know, everything that happens has positive and negative consequences. It's just the nature of life. So nothing's perfect. I mean, that's just part and parcel of our existence is nothing. Nothing is really perfect or fully adequate. As we say in our precepts, to speak one word is to break the precept, do not speak dishonestly. Anytime we express anything, it's not quite it. It's not fully conveying the reality, right? So we live with that reality, but at the same time, there's this other aspect of existence, this independent dimension, which isn't a transcendent, far out place you go or, you know, fantastic mind state you attain. It's really just part of our everyday existence, whether we recognize it or not. Just most of the time we don't recognize it. And for me, it helps to think this point of view or this way of relating to life, it's just at a different it's at a different scale, right? It's like when we're caught up in our expectations, our view has shrunk down. And when we expand our awareness, we expand our view, those issues can end up seeming quite small. And I always think of, what if you only had 1 week to live? All of a sudden, you know, the traffic you run into on the way home is just like, it might move you to tears. You're still alive to be stuck in traffic. You might have an argument with a friend and just think, that's far out. I mean, nothing, you know, if you get a cold, a runny nose would be like, wow, I have a nose. And we can't, most of us can't hold that kind of perspective all the time, but that's all it takes, is just that shift in perspective, and suddenly, you know, the congealing oatmeal or even major setbacks are no longer the big deal. That, you know, we're talking about these reactions, and we had that list, the reactions that we have to them. So one of the things that my teacher said to me, because, you know, I have strong opinions, strong desires, I want to make a difference, I'm very wary of acceptance and letting go. But she said, it's okay to say, it would be nice if. This is kind of getting at, you know, what people were saying about some of those desires, like, it would be nice if the people in my life were honest with me. It would be nice. I can acknowledge it would be nice, right? Without that kind of really, you know, self-absorbed sense of expectation, so that if that expectation, if that hope isn't met, I'm not, you know, enraged or devastated. So for myself, I have an improving mind, right? That in another life, I think I could have been an engineer. Life is a series of problems to be solved, and it's very fulfilling to solve them. I mean, the cold oatmeal, I would be sitting there running through all the ways that the process could be more efficient, where we could get little hot plates outside, and or we could change the timing so that the oatmeal doesn't arrive too early, or we could have another server and the serving could go faster. And I'd be thinking about that for the duration of breakfast every single day, from the beginning of breakfast to the end of breakfast, which is just so stupid, right? And similarly, in my current life, I resent stoplights. Not so much because of the delay, but because of my expectation that the people who design and engineer the stoplights would make them make more sense. So I am not sitting at this intersection for like a full minute when there's no one else around, right? So that's where this expectation comes in, of efficiency, right? Or I resent sexism in my society more than I might resent it in other societies, because I have a higher expectation for my society. So all of this stuff is, it's not that my opinions are wrong, right? And as long as I just try to argue with them and fight with them, I get nowhere. Maybe you get somewhere. And if you do, that's super. That's great. But, you know, we can't not think what we think. We can't not see what we see. So this isn't about suddenly pretending that's not so. Or pretending, actually, people are very honest. You know, it is just being with what is. But it also is being with our own responses and reactions. So one of the things that I I find helpful is when I'm getting, you know, wound up in those negative reactions to unmet expectations, is I can't argue to myself, oh, it doesn't really matter. Everything is perfect just the way it is. And there's a part of me that's just like, no, it's not. Let me tell you why. So sometimes I just internally, I say, yes, you're right. Yes. Yes, these stoplights are set up very badly. You know, and that's like this little self is like, yeah. And but somehow just, it, again, it's almost like you're just stepping back from the situation just a little bit and you're saying, yeah, okay. Even if that is so. You know, it suddenly it begins to put it into perspective as to what exactly, how big a deal this actually is. So those are some of my thoughts and feelings on it. We have a couple minutes left. Any last questions or comments? Linda.
I was thinking that letting go of expectations could reduce my tendency to obsess on the negative, you know, what's bothering me, what problem might be presenting itself. It could help a person, you know, focus more on the positive and appreciate what we have as opposed to what we don't.
Yeah, as long as, you know, I'm imagining if I'm sitting in Kyogen's situation with the oatmeal, right? Just think of all the things that I'm not noticing.
Ooh.
as I'm rehearsing and engineering a solution to this problem, right? Yeah. I'm not noticing the flavor of the food or the sun shining through the window or, you know, all kinds of things that I'm just not appreciating or aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And probably there is a place for that old prayer, right? About like what can, you know, to recognize the things that we can do something about, you know, accept those things that we can't do anything about, and hopefully we'll know the difference. But even if there's something that we can do something about, or more importantly, will do something about, right? Because sometimes we can just, you know, hash over what's wrong, even though we're never actually going to do anything about it, because frankly, it's not that big a deal. But even if it is something that we need to address or we want to address, we have to, if we're mindful, this is where the mindfulness comes in, you know, of just noticing what's going on for you. Where does your mind go? How long are you spending on it? We very quickly pass over the point at which all of that perseveration is useful. You know, we will just sit and stew over something that has upset us all day. When if we really thought, okay, I'm going to think constructively about this and what I should probably do about it, you know, probably 10 minutes would suffice. And then we can hopefully set it aside. All right. Well, I will say our closing verse. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all for coming.